Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe. I'm up in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon this week, and I'm broadcasting to you live all over the world on the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the frequency modulated band and streaming live on Voice of Vashon, all one word, voiceofvashon.org. My greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people and those of you who no longer, or not no longer, but those of you who are not yet Captain Joe's people who have either voted or are yet to vote, because a week from today on the November, a week from today, is the special election in some parts of the country and a regular election for other parts of the country. Your captain has submitted his ballot. And here in the state of Washington, of course, we do not have polling places anymore. We have either mail-in or you can drop it into a special box, which here on the magical Isle of Vashon is also right next door to the Vashon Library. And so I am urging all of you who have not yet voted to go down behind the radiator where the ballot envelope has dropped, retrieve it, and fill it out. Use black ink in the little boxes if that's the way you do it. And if you have the privilege of going to a polling place, get yourself into your motor car or your walker or your hiker or your walking stick or however you do it. I always enjoyed, in particular, when we did have polling places, going to them because it was an opportunity to visit with the volunteers who manned the polling places and to also exercise in the most personal way that greatest of privileges that we have, that of the secret ballot. The binnacle list this week is bereft of those who have crossed the bar. Last week, of course, I had to report a couple. This week, I have none like that to report, but there are several people who have upcoming surgeries. My daughter, Laurie, is one of them. And a number of other people have either procedures or surgeries between now and next week. I have one of those where I go and check with the surgeon who did the bone graft, and we'll see whether either I've lost the bone graft. It doesn't feel like it's in there, but then one never knows. So that happens on Monday. And all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list with upcoming either procedures or meetings or whatever it is that you've got going on, know that, as always, you are in the palm of my hand. The mission today is the same as it always is, and that is to make all of you who give me the privilege of a half hour of your time every Tuesday afternoon at one bell of the afternoon watch, but however many bells it is, wherever you are, to make you feel just a little bit better about yourself and about the world in which we live. To that end, today, my book today is an unlikely one for a sailor. It is the 2026 edition of the Federal Aviation Regulations and the Aeronautical Information Manual. Now, I have to tell all of you that one of the traditions that I have started here on the Voice of Vashon is that Captain O'Brien, who is a retired Alaska Airlines captain, and his friend, colleague, and former student, the counselor, are aviation enthusiasts, licensed pilots. And I am an aviation enthusiast, but I am not a licensed pilot. However, I do have an account with Sporty's Pilot Shop, and to that end, every year when the new edition of the Federal Aviation Regulations and Airmen's Information Manual comes out, it is this year over, let me see, it is this year 1,099, more than that, 1,105 pages long. And it contains an enormous amount of really good information. And it is my book this week because I was thumbing through it. And I came to a paragraph in the Aeronautical Information Manual section, page 906, called Mountain Flying. And I quote from that, because it is also applicable to those of us who chose and now choose to go to sea to make a living. So I quote from section 7-6-7, page 906 of the Aeronautical Information Manual, Mountain Flying. Your first experience of flying over mountainous terrain, particularly if most of your flight time has been over the flatlands of the Midwest, could be a never-to-be-forgotten nightmare if proper planning is not done, and if you are not aware of the potential hazards awaiting. Those familiar section lines are not present in the mountains. Those flat level fields for forced landings are practically non-existent. Abrupt changes in wind direction and velocity occur. Severe updrafts and downdrafts are common, particularly near or above abrupt changes of terrain, such as cliffs or rugged areas. Even the clouds look different and can build up with startling rapidity. But mountain flying need not be hazardous if you follow the recommendations below. And then follows a long section about planning and how you do it and how you keep from colliding with the mountains. All of those things are as applicable to those of us who chose and choose to go to sea. You think ahead, you post lookouts as far forward in the eyes of the ship as is possible and practicable, and you use all of your experience and your training to, in the case of a sailor, not run aground. In the case of a pilot in command, not to collide with that mountainside. Each is a metaphor for the other. And I derive, even though I am not myself a licensed pilot, I do a lot of reading about it. Of course, I fly a lot. I'm very critical of the landings which aircraft commanders in the airline industry make. And if it is a particularly smooth and good one, a butter landing, catching the third wire, I make a point of saying something to the captain. And sometimes he will say, well, it was the first officer, the three-striper, to me, the XO, who made the landing. And I said, well, even more so, pass my well done, my Bravo Zulu, to him or her. So that's my book for this week. I know that I do not expect that anyone will rush out to their version of Sporty's Pilot Shop to buy a copy, but I derive an enormous amount of enjoyment out of each year's edition, and I am hopeful that you will as well. My magazine this week, of course, is The Week, And it is, I don't know whether I did this one or not before, cozy houses for less than £465,000 sterling. If I did, I'm going to do it again, and I'm going to pick another house because this is within our price range. And in fact, now that I look at this, I see that I did. I'm going to pick another house because I'm going to pick one in Cornwall because I happen to like Cornwall a lot. Here's one at £425,000 sterling. It is called Toy Cottage, and it is in the town of Gunwallo. I love some of those Cornish names. A chocolate box cottage just 600 yards from the beach. 202 beds, family bath. What that means is that there is only one in that house, and it was a retrofit. A kitchen, two receptions or living rooms, a garden, an annex, and a garage, or a garage, £425,000 sterling. Comes, of course, from The Week, and The Week is one of our favorite publications. So that's the magazine for this week. There's another one, though, and that one is coming from the Nautical Institute of London. It is Navigator, which comes out every month. And the big theme of the Navigator in this particular issue is the disruption, jamming, spoofing, and shifting of global positioning systems. We've talked about this a little bit before, and we'll talk about it again, because it is possible for all of those things to happen. It is possible for the people that own a particular GPS system, and not only do we, the United States, put one out through the Department of Defense, not the Department of War, the Department of Defense, but also the Russians have one which is equally susceptible to being shifted. So if you are using a GPS receiver, which is included on your telephone, and it says that you are in Buffalo instead of Seattle, then you will know that it has been shifted. So moving on from the magazine and the book, we're going to do a little bit of updating today, and I'm going to try to be updating only on happy things, and that includes an update on the Dutch flagship Themsborg that was impaled on that pinnacle up in the Northwest Passage. That pinnacle was about halfway across in an area called Franklin Strait, named for Sir John Franklin, who was himself trying to transit the Northwest Passage back in the middle of the 19th century. And he went missing, and of course his wife, Lady Jane, was the one who kept organizing rescue missions. It's a great story, and one that maybe I'll cover in some detail in a future broadcast. However, Themsborg, under the Dutch flag, impaled herself on this pinnacle in Franklin Strait. And an article that I read about this is that the owners are beginning to say that this was an unmapped or uncharted pinnacle. I've looked at that chart. It looks pretty charted to me. And not only that, but Themsborg had been past that place a number of times before and had managed to miss it. So how did she get up there? And more to the point, how was she gotten off? Because if she was gotten off with care, and clearly she was, then she did not do any damage to the environment. There was no oil leakage or anything like that. And she is now in a shipyard in eastern Canada in Quebec, in the province of Quebec, in Baie-Comeau. I have been by there when I took my North Wind up through the St. Lawrence River and up into the Great Lakes. And so she is there. She's being evaluated now. And then a shipyard will be selected to put her up on the blocks and to make repairs. In the meantime, more of her cargo has been offloaded. And happily, not only was there no pollution, but there were no injuries. She was just stuck up on top of that pinnacle, and nobody wanted to actually pull her off laterally so as to do further damage to the hull. The way that it was done was to lighten her so that she would rise up off of it. And a well done for the salvage master who organized all of that, because, in fact, she is going to be able to be repaired. And I await with barely concealed anticipation the report as to, first of all, how she got there, and then secondly, how she was gotten off with no damage to the no damage to the environment, no damage to any of her people, and I also await the report as to what repairs are going to be necessary so that her owners can get her back to work. The Chinese are in an operation called Sea Legend, are planning 16 voyages via the Northern Sea Route in 2026. They used the container ship Istanbul Bridge with a very low ice class to do a transit of the Northern Sea Route with icebreaker escort from China to Felixstowe in the United Kingdom in 20 days. This was done in late September of this year. There was no ice that she had to break through. And so all of this is to tell us that there is going to be a further transit, many more transits of the Northern Sea Route. And the Chinese and the Russian governments have both now entered into an agreement to make all of this an even more efficient operation. But what we should be looking at, of course, and the Russians in particular will be looking at that, is that if they get a really bad ice year and they end up with a ship like Istanbul Bridge with almost no ice strengthening and she gets caught, to get her out of there without any environmental or people or ship damage. It's going to be a tricky operation, and of course the Russians have these enormous nuclear-powered icebreakers. Not only do they have them working now, but there is at least one more of them under construction of the same class. And all of these will be operated by the company or the organization called Rosatom, which is the organization in the Russian Federation that operates the nuclear-powered icebreakers. And we are going to be seeing much more of the Chinese/Russian activity along the Northern Sea Route in 2026. In the meantime, our own Interior Department is talking about shipping natural gas from the North Slope directly to the lower 48. I can show them how to do this. I wrote my Cambridge Scott Polar Research Institute master's thesis on just this subject. I constructed in that thesis a system including a pipeline from Prudhoe Bay all the way out to the west near Point Barrow. And I even costed it out in some rough calculations as to how much it would cost in those days 20 years ago. Should the Department of Interior in the Trump administration want to know how to do it, I will be happy to be a consultant to the Secretary of Interior on how it can be done, how I constructed that system to make it happen. In an interesting situation with the USS Nimitz. Nimitz, of course, is the lead ship in the Nimitz class of aircraft carriers. She is now about 50 years old. I believe that this may be her last deployment. And she had two strike damage aircraft accidents just in the last few days. The commander-in-chief has opined, and I am wondering where his skills come from in this particular area, he has opined that possibly it happened because of bad fuel. I have carried helicopters, and I have carried JP-5 to fuel them. And I can assure the commander-in-chief that should Nimitz be as careful with her fuel supply, and I'm sure that she is because she fuels every single one of the aircraft with the jet fuel that is extremely carefully handled, extremely carefully filtered, extremely carefully managed so that only the best quality fuel goes into all of those aircraft because the lives of the pilots and the crew members depend on that. I find it to be highly unlikely that it was fuel. However, I also would have thought that it was highly unlikely that there was bad fuel in Red Hill and we all in Hawaii underneath Tripler Army Hospital, right close aboard to the Coast Guard housing in Red Hill on Oahu. And yet, there was a situation there from which we are still recovering and which we are still paying for. But I think that fuel management aboard ship, and I don't think, I know, because I've been responsible for it myself with my own aircraft and my own flying, because I was often in the left seat of one of my own aircraft. And I knew, because I would get the fuel and water report every morning from the engineering officer, I knew how much fuel we had in the way of diesel fuel for the main engines and JP-5 for the aircraft. I knew not only how much we had, but I knew that the quality of it was of the highest because I would not have allowed any flights, including my own, if I thought that there was any question at all about the quality and purity of the fuel that was going into my aircraft. And I'm sure that the air boss and the captain in Nimitz feels the same way. I look forward, as I do with all boards of investigation, I look forward to the investigative report on this one, and I will, of course, report back. But, Commander-in-Chief, I question your ability to know anything about fuel quality aboard an aircraft carrier or aboard a Coast Guard cutter. And my guess is that the causes were something else. I see here that the people from Gitmo, the Navy people from Gitmo, have been evacuated from there to Pensacola to get out of the way of Hurricane Melissa. And Melissa, right now, as of the time when I came here, was showing about 185 miles per hour, 160 knots, and she was headed toward the west side of Jamaica. And in fact, I believe she's already made landfall there in Jamaica. But the people from Gitmo have been evacuated to Pensacola, Florida. I don't know what, besides the prison complex, and there is left in Gitmo. I do know that I have taken three ships to Gitmo. One of them was my Ingham getting ready to go to Vietnam, and two of them were under my command, Reliance and Northwind. So I don't know how many people there were. I don't know what they're doing in Gitmo except for the prison complex. I hope that they evacuated everybody and did not leave anybody who is incarcerated there. Fair is fair. And my heart goes out to all of the people in Jamaica and Haiti and all of those that are in the way of Melissa. What an incredibly strong storm that one has turned out to be. Looking at updating on IVIC, ex-IVIC, now Storis. She has returned from her first deployment, and there was a photograph of her up in Alaska that had to do with her being in the ice. I noticed that although there was a lot of ice in the background, that she was sitting in open water. My guess is that she did not on purpose search out any flat ice that she could test herself in breaking. But if she were under my command, that's one of the first things that we would have done would have been to take her to find some ice that she could actually break. See how well she did it. See how well she backs down in it. I would be really skeptical about backing her down into any kind of really hard stuff. But the only way that we're going to find out what her true capabilities are, and she is not, no matter how much the Coast Guard keeps saying this, she is not an icebreaker. She is an ice-strengthened ship. And the only way that we're going to know what her true capabilities are is to put her into ice that is under pressure and ridged, and see how well she does. An experienced ice master, her captain should be that, will be able to put her into a situation from which she can be extracted and from which she will not suffer any mortal damage. All ships talk to their captains. All ships tell their captains when they are hurting. All ships are attuned to the environment in which they are living. And I await, along with all these other reports of different things that are going on in the world, I await with barely concealed anticipation the report of her first incursion to where she actually breaks some ice, because I do not believe that she did when she was on that last deployment. The time has come once again for me to say that we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. Next week, I will be still here on the magical Isle of Vashon. In the meantime, all of Captain Joe's people who have procedures coming up, who have important meetings having to do with their own health situation, whether you are in Lothian or whether you are in PDX, wherever you are in the world, know that you are, as always, in the palm of my hand. So we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And this is your Captain Joe. I'm up in the captain's chair. I have my lookouts posted as far forward in the eyes of the ship as is possible to be signaling to me any dangers or opportunities. And as always, I am on station and watching properly.